Hello and welcome to another episode of Radio Entrepreneurs. My name is Alex Cooper and I'm filling in for Jeffrey Davis as host today. On today's episode, we're going to break from tradition a little bit and do a deep dive into design thinking, a topic that I think is increasingly important for industry. If you haven't heard of design thinking before, then you'll definitely want to stick around because this is a methodology or process that can be applied to just about any business that has any interaction at all with human beings. And it can help you improve just about anything that you're doing. Its origins are in software development and user interface in a user experience world, but the techniques have been used for everything from designing better experiences for children's MRIs to helping people clean their kitchen floors. So there's much opportunity for innovation and differentiation in today's world revolves around designing superior customer experiences. On today's show, we're fortunate to have a panel of outstanding guests who've all done work around design thinking. Matt Belch, who's the founder of Vision and Logic. John Carter is the principal at TC Gen. David Roller, who's a user experience designer and has been doing this for over 35 years. And Joe Ramp, who is also a UX designer. So without further ado, I'll get into some of the questions about this. I mean, probably the first question on people's minds is, what is design thinking and why is it important?
I guess I'll start and then we'll turn it over to the panel to give some more color to it. So design thinking in general is a human-centered method. It originated, I'd say, as far back as the 1960s. It doesn't just go with software. It was originated with industrial design and people trying to look at the science of design. But really what it, you know, why should I care if you're in any kind of business? It's because where it starts is with your customer. And it tries to understand the feelings that they have experiencing whatever product or service it is that you provide. And to then fine tune that service or come up with a better one based on an understanding of their deepest needs and how they actually think and how they actually feel. I'm going to turn this over to some of the others to give some of their color to this.
Absolutely. Does anyone else want to chime in? David looks like he's smiling over there on the other side in Canada, I believe. Is that right?
Well, essentially, you know, to say something like customer-centered design can sound like a theory or like a buzzword. And the simple fact is, if the customers aren't involved and consulted in the process, if they aren't thought of in the process, then of creating a product or delivering it, then you're going to make mistakes. You're going to do things wrong and you're going to leave money on the table, frankly. So from a purely practical standpoint, it only makes sense to focus on the people who are actually going to be buying your offer, who are actually going to be using, experiencing what you have to offer.
Right. I think of it as, I kind of wish the word design wasn't in the term design thinking, because to me it's really just a rapid and repeatable problem finding, idea generation, and sort of product improvement and new product creation process that is really focused on understanding real needs of customers. And I really don't think you can create great products if you don't understand what needs you're trying to meet.
And although my colleagues might disagree with this, I think some credit should be given to Stanford and their so-called D School, who basically took many of these great principles and strung them together in 10 steps that they preach and that they follow. So although the description that my colleagues are providing, I think, is actually the heart of the whole process being user-centric. There are others that have a high degree of formalism, and I think just for sake of fairness, I'd represent where at least that term has been promulgated.
Actually, I will just chime in a second and say I don't disagree with you. I agree with you, John. Stanford D School was one of the seminal places and is still a very important place for people who want to learn more about design thinking. And to their credit, they take students from a wide range of disciplines, just about every discipline that Stanford has, and allow them to enroll in the D School to participate in it. But it's not the only source. IDEO, guys like Tim Brown and Bill Moybridge, you know, they were writing about design thinking, and it goes back even to people like Buckminster Fuller, and a little more recently than that, people like Christopher Alexander, who wrote the book Pattern Language, and a guy named Horst Riddle, who was at Berkeley in the 1970s, writing about the theory of design. There's a huge pile of contributions. It's if you're interested in academic formalism, there's quite a tradition here. And I think the point for the audience is that it's not just something that a bunch of us made up. Mm-hmm. It's methods that have some real intellectual rigor behind it. But I think where we're coming from as well is that it can be applied in business applications. All of us, all four of us, have been using these methods very successfully and make a huge difference in the development of products. So not so much about the academic formalism, but more about, you know, can this be applied to real world problems?
Well, that brings up the next question that I want to get into is, why should businesses care about what design thinking is and how can they use it?
Well, Dave had a good answer to that. I'll build on it and let the others go as well. The basic idea here is that you're trying to understand the core of what your customer feels and needs. And sometimes they have needs that they don't even know that they have. And by using these methods, the methods typically have to do with interviewing people, observing them, watching them, and seeing, you know, what they might need that you could provide for them. Very often, you know, there's the famous one, Henry Ford saying, if I asked people what they wanted, they would set a faster horse. The thing is, the inventor will have an idea, but then the inventor needs to go observe people and understand how they actually think and work in order to better provide their service. And this, you know, this can be used in a wide range of things, anything from medical services to law to software, where we're using it quite a bit. I mean, any of those things involve humans experiencing a service or a product. And in all those cases, there are almost certainly areas that you can improve.
Yeah, I think businesses should care because there's really only two things you can do if you're running a business. You can create a new product or service, or you can improve an existing product or service. And this is the fastest way to do either one. So, and it starts with developing empathy. So if you look at, there's five stages to it. So there's empathy, definition, ideation, prototyping, and testing. So and these are things that can be done in a day. So empathy, first step is talk to your customers or your users and find out what their experience currently is with your product or with the service you're trying to create. And then from there, that's when you create ideas and it's a rapid way to come up with ideas that both work and don't work.
Excellent. Now, one thought I was wondering about is, can service companies apply this? A lot of people in our audience are in service industries, lawyers, accountants, other professionals. Can you imagine ways that they might be able to use design thinking?
I'd be happy to answer, but I think the panel has some ideas to contribute here. I'll chime in if others want to. Others don't want to.
Well, one example is the customer contact center at Toyota. And one of their challenges was providing high quality and efficient service to answer customers' complex problems. This was a totally internal team, as opposed to thinking about ideation outside the company. So the context was Toyota Motors sales customer contact center for Toyota, Lexus, and the Scion brands. And believe it or not, the cross-functional team that was engaged in this particular situation were all internal. They were call reps, call center reps, software engineers, business leaders, and change agents in a design process that transformed the service center experience for both customers and frontline employees. So there's an example of not only it being interesting because it's pure service, but also because it's purely internal. So that's one example.
Yeah, another example is I go to a doctor at One Medical, which is a basically a doctor's office that was redesigned. They have a few different locations, but it was redesigned based on interviews with people about visiting their doctor and what they didn't like about it. So if you go to One Medical, the first thing that strikes you is the waiting room. It feels like you could be in a spa. Or you definitely wouldn't guess that you were at a doctor's office, and then when the doctor walks out, like my doctor comes out in jeans and a polo shirt, like I had to ask her if she was the doctor. So it makes you very comfortable. You don't wait at all. Yeah. So they took all the friction out of the doctor's visit, really making patients more comfortable, and people actually visit the doctor more often there because of it.